Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland Podcast. This episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy League. As we get closer to the Serie A season, we're going to give you more fantasy football tips. We're going to have our own fantasy calcio league for Calcioland on Euro Fantasy League. So we look forward to that. So I don't even know where to begin. So much has happened since our last episode on Friday. Something that I wanted to lead off the show with feels like such old news. So much happened. So to sort through the recent craziness, I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg, who's going absolutely viral with his videos on Twitter. So, Alex, great to chat with you. Let's just go over the last two events. So let me ask you, which of the two you think is crazier? Last night, we had Roma fans at the airport waiting for Malcolm to land from Bordeaux. The transfer seemed all set. Bordeaux and Roma had sent tweets about it, and then all of a sudden, the deal was off. And right after that, if that wasn't crazy enough, more and more rumors emerged that Leonardo Bonucci could be returning to Juve. I remember it was around this time last year that we had the episode on Bonucci going to Milan, and in a way, this feels even crazier. So, Alex, of the two, which one stood out to you the most?
Yeah, well, both of them are awfully surprising, absolutely. And don't get me wrong, Bonucci just going to Milan in the first place was almost 10 out of 10 surprising for me, and I'm sure for many Juventus fans and Milan fans. And now to hear that he might be going back after 1 year, I think that's the surprising part. Now, sometimes we do see some great players shockingly move away from the team they've been on for a long, long time, and maybe we do see them return home, but it's usually not after 1 year. So if he went right back to Juve after 1 year, that is very, very surprising. And that would certainly once again set Serie A ablaze. But my answer, David, is certainly this Malcolm situation. And it's because something you said. Bordeaux and Roma already sent out tweets about it. Now, I have a golden rule. I'm no reporter, and people on Twitter should know that. But still, I'll sometimes be asked, what do you think the likelihood of this deal is? And I'll always say, first, I'll say, I'm no reporter, but I always wait. This is my tagline. I always wait for either the Di Marzio camp to say it's official, or the actual team itself to tweet out something about it. And guess what? They actually did. They actually did tweet out that they were coming to terms. They still said a medical and personal terms needed to be agreed. But anytime the team itself talks about the player they're acquiring, you assume it's pretty much done. So, wow. I mean, this is crazy between Roma and Barca. And now we're seeing this new rivalry kind of brew after what obviously happened last year in the Champions League. Absolutely ridiculous that Roma were just totally snubbed, you could say, by Malcolm. Totally did not see that one coming, as I'm sure many did not. But David, I have to ask, within this Malcolm situation, does Roma have any legal recourse? And also, who will they target next?
So this is actually a rather interesting, and Monchi today held a long press conference where he talked about it, and there was a very important detail that I picked up on as I was looking at the actual tweets that Bordeaux and Roma sent out yesterday. So Monchi said that they had agreed to a deal. They hadn't signed the paperwork, but that Bordeaux had agreed to the transfer to let Malcolm get on the plane to go to Rome. That's the last he had heard through the agent of Malcolm. Then all of a sudden, all the rumors on Barcelona surfaced, and the agent called Monchi to say, hey, wait a second, Bordeaux has a bigger offer from Barcelona. Will you match it? So Monchi went back to Bordeaux and said, hey, we had an agreement. You guys even tweeted about it. And Bordeaux came back and said, well, you know, we didn't sign any documents. We got a better offer from Barcelona. Will you match it? And very interestingly, I was looking at Bordeaux's tweet, and it said that, you know, there was an agreement pending the signatures of the document. You got to wonder if they send that tweet to kind of give more urgency to Barcelona and other club. He was linked to Everton as well, to make another deal. So it was rather shady. I'm not sure how much of a recourse Roma has. I'm not even sure if it's really worthwhile going down that path. It was interesting, too, that Monchi said that when Bordeaux told them that they were going to send out send out the tweet on it, he said, look, you know, we're a publicly traded company. This isn't ideal for us. We can only send out tweets if the news is official, but that happened anyway. So maybe based on that, they have some recourse, but I then really have to wonder, ultimately, what do you really gain from that? To me, that's just energy wasted when you need to focus more on bringing in another replacement. So Di Marzio sent out a list today, the usual suspects, Berardi and Suso in Serie A. We had Talvin from the French national team. We had Bailey, a player I know you like a lot, Alex, but that would probably cost more than what Malcolm, what Roma was willing to pay for Malcolm. Another interesting one, and this is our friend John Solano. By the way, really did outstanding coverage on the whole Malcolm thing. He was in touch with Malcolm's agent, had really great content on AS Roma Press. He brought up another Swedish player who could come after goalkeeper Olsen, and that's Forsberg, who has the same agent as Olsen and a player that Roma has been linked with. Another name that Roma has been linked in the past that might become, again, a target now with Malcolm out of the mist, and that's Ziyech from Ajax. So let's see what Roma does. This is obviously pretty shocking. At least it didn't happen right at the end of the transfer window, and they do have a chance to bring someone else in.
Oh, they have such a ridiculous squad already, Roma, with young wingers and Kluivert and Under, and also just a lot of more offensive players. It's crazy that they're even needing another player like a Malcolm or a next target, but hey, that's what they want. Go for it. And also, I would love to see Roma and Barca play in the Champions League next year. That would be delicious. But David, let's get to the next part of what we talked about at the top here. What are the odds, in your opinion, that Bonucci returns to Juventus?
You know, they actually look rather good right now, and this is shocking. And again, this is happening so quickly, but just like last year, the transfer to Milan, in the blink of an eye, it happened. So the first reports emerged last night on Bonucci potentially returning to Juve. Today we had Leonardo, the new sporting director at Milan, meeting with Marotta and Paratici to talk about this. So there's definitely a lot of momentum on this. It's rather interesting that the catalyst for all this is Bonucci. There were some reports that he wanted to return to Juve in January already. You know, he had been linked to some foreign clubs, but we remember last year for family reasons, and I do think he has a good reason to want to stay in Italy. I could see why he wants to go back to Juve, the only club that can pretty much pay him the wages that he's currently making now. So this would be, a rather interesting deal. There's just a lot of factors to it. So let's take it one by one. It would probably involve Higuain at some point because Juve wants to get rid of Higuain's salary, who counts a huge amount on their books. Bonucci wouldn't be cheap. Bringing in Bonucci would be very expensive wages-wise for Juve. As far as the transfer fee, they'd probably have to pay whatever's left on the amortized value for Milan. But anytime you're looking at wages of 7 million net, so after taxes, you're looking at a hit at 14 million per season. So bringing in Bonucci would kind of nullify the benefit that you get from selling Higuain. So Juve, who's already spent a lot this summer, not just on Ronaldo, but also on bringing back Douglas Costa, on Perin and Emre Can and Cancelo, they have to make up some money elsewhere. And the player we're hearing a lot about is center back Caldara, who was at Atalanta last season. It's interesting that his agent, Rizzo, who represents a lot of former Atalanta players, already met with both Milan and Juve about this. So this has some momentum. I know there's a lot of Juve fans that are really upset at the prospect of potentially losing Caldara. I can see why. A very promising center back. I think a lot of people penciled him in as the center back of the future, essentially what Rugani was supposed to be a year or two ago. But the problem is Juve is going to have to make up some money somehow because of all their expenses this summer. And we've talked a lot about it on the podcast. The young players that you haven't spent much money on, those are the ones that you can really make a big profit on, because the way you really should look at a transfer is what's the amortized value left for the old club and the transfer fee that you receive. So let's say Juve values Caldara at 30, 40 million. That's a very big return because they didn't spend a lot on him. So there's really a lot of moving factors to this. At this point, it really wouldn't surprise me to see Higuain on Milan. He wants to stay in Italy, seems to prefer the Milan destination, and Bonucci going home. And that's going to be rather interesting. But there are going to be some more dominoes for Juve on having to sell other players to make up all the expenses they've had this summer. So those are our two big topics of the week. We have a lot of other fun topics to discuss, and these all comes from our listeners. As usual, you can send in questions using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, I like this for a first question, David. Why would Juventus even consider letting Pjanic go when the midfield has been their weak spot for a while?
So we've been talking on the podcast how, you know, at some point you have to make up for all the expenses that Juve had this summer. I think with Ronaldo in the fold, sacrificing Higuain is something that's not painful for Juve fans because you've made an upgrade at that position. I think even Rugani, when you read of huge offers, it's like, okay, if that means that we could afford everything else that we can bring in, that's okay. But once you get into some other players, that's when Juve fans start getting a little bit upset. I think Alexandro, based on how poor he was last season, could be seen as a player that it's like, okay, if he leaves, we can survive. We're not losing the player that we had 2 years ago in him. But once we start getting into someone like Pjanic, like, that's a really painful loss. So we talked a little bit about it on Friday. Pjanic recently changed agents. He went with Ramadani, a very influential agent. Usually when a player changes agents, one of two things are going to happen. He's either going to get a new contract on high wages, and look, Juve really extended themselves with Ronaldo, who earns over four times more than what Higuain and Dybala did last season. So the top players on Juve are like, wait a second, I got to get some of this money as well, or to look for a potential sale. And Ramadani has a lot of connections in the Premier League. Pjanic has been linked to Chelsea and Manchester City. There's been some reports that Guardiola already called Pjanic. I mean, after Manchester City lost out on Jorginho, it makes sense that they'd be after Pjanic. So that's from Pjanic's perspective, and it makes perfect sense that there'd be a big market for him. Now let's look at it from Juve's perspective. We do know that they've always been at the mercy of the player's will. If a player wants to go, they usually won't stand in their way. In my experience, they haven't. Maybe they did last summer with Alexandro, since they had lost so many other defensive starters, but usually if the player wants to go, they'll let it happen. But they need to get a very adequate offer. And right now, Juve has set the price at 100 million euro for Pjanic. And this goes back to what I was talking about earlier, the amortized value and the real profit that you can make on this. The fact that Juve got Pjanic as such a good bargain 2 years ago, in a way, maybe makes it a little bit more likely that they would consider selling him. If Pjanic is sold for around 100 million, they invested 32 million on him. They've amortized 2 years of that already. You're looking at a massive profit, almost the cost of what it would cost to have Ronaldo for 1 year at Juve. You could almost make that up with Pjanic. But look, you know, this is obviously a painful loss because the midfield has been Juve's weak link. I'm not the biggest Pjanic fan, but last season he clearly was the best midfielder on Juve. So this would be a really tough loss. I would definitely look at this. I wouldn't dismiss it altogether. But I do think, you know, Juve would have to be really overwhelmed for an offer. And they'd also be able to know that to spin it on Pjanic and say that he was the one that wanted to leave.
All right. Interesting. So an appropriate follow-up, David, would be, if Pjanic leaves, who would Juve target to replace him?
So again, you know, at this time, I would say odds are Pjanic will stay at Juve. But if he does leave, there are a couple of names that I would look at. The first is Dembele from Spurs. I think he'd be the most logical one that Juve go for, also because of the cost. Because to me, it doesn't make much sense if you're sacrificing Pjanic for financial reasons to make up for all the expenses you had this summer to then see Juve reinvested on a super expensive player, sure, that would be ideal if you're a Juve fan. But I see that as a little bit unlikely. Dembele, on the other hand, has just 1 year left on his contract. He's an older player. Juve were really impressed with him when they played against Spurs in the Champions League. He's a player that Allegri told the club he'd be interested in having. So if I had to guess, he'd probably be the most likely when I look at the cost, the quality, and I think he'd be the most comparable to Pjanic. Two other names are Paredes, who's at Zenit, who's a player that Juve has been after since he was at Roma. He'd be definitely more expensive than Dembele. That's another name that I would look at. And the other one is Mateo Kovacic, a player that Allegri has many times said that he really likes, a player that has been linked to Juve many times. But now we go back to the fact that he'd be very, very expensive. Real Madrid would certainly look for a massive return on him. The other thing is maybe Juve goes in-house and just wants to give Bentancur more responsibility, but that might be a little bit of a gamble since Juve's goal is to win the Champions League, to hand the keys to the midfield to him. So those are just alternatives. Again, as it stands now, I would still find it more surprising to see Pjanic leave than anything else, but I'm sure Juve has already prepared in case it happens.
They can happily have Cesc Fabregas. That's what they can certainly have from Chelsea. So, David, let's move off of Juve. Could Arsenal chief executive Ivan Gazidis join Milan's new management?
Yeah, so actually that's been the report. It was on Di Marzio's site today, a report by Pepe Di Stefano, who is someone who's very familiar with Milan's management, the ownership situation. So it sounds like Gazidis is going to arrive in September. I had some Arsenal fans tweet me that he's on the tour with them. That they're like, how does this make sense? So it looks like he joined Milan later on. He joined a very impressive front office. When you look at who else Milan has had, I could see how this is going to be an attractive project for him. So based on the reports that we had on Di Marzio's side, my guess is Gazidis is going to be part of this, but he won't join until September.
All right, David, next question. Staying on Milan, what do you make of Milan's new management?
You have to be very impressed with what the Elliott Fund has done since they took over. And look, you know, I've been advocating since last December that the sooner this happened, the better for Milan. But I have to be impressed with how quickly they've acted. So they were able to win the appeal with UEFA. Milan's going to be able to play in the Europa League. I definitely think that wouldn't have happened without Elliott backing the club as opposed to the Chinese owners that were there before. They brought in a great management team. They're going to bring back Umberto Gandini, who was a director at Milan for years, handled all their relationships with UEFA and other clubs. He went to Roma for a few years, did an excellent job there, one of the most respected directors in Italy. He'll be part of the team. They're bringing in Leonardo from PSG, who was at Milan in various capacities before, someone who has a great track record on the market. And Gazidis looks like he'll be the third member of what we'd call in Italy the triade. So, you know, I think, you know, when you look at what Juve's done in recent years, more than anything, it's the strength of their management. I really think in a lot of ways it always starts at the top and it trickles down. So you have to be very impressed with the team Milan has put together. They acted quickly, got rid of Fassone and Mirabelli, and they replaced them very well. Now, there's already a lot of speculation. I've had some Milan fans tell me, well, you know, this is great, but how long will the Elliott Fund be here? It's like, I don't know, but, you know, it's about carpe diem. Seize the day, enjoy the moment. So far, you have to be thrilled with the fact that the Chinese owners are gone. Milan was never going to move forward as long as they were in the mix. Elliott has done really well. Their job now is to make Milan into a much better asset. Maybe they'll keep it for a few years. Maybe it'll be a quicker sale, but they definitely look much more competent than this time last week. That's for sure.
All right, this next question, with everything that's gone on in the last 24 hours, this subject really feels like old news. But David, with Alisson joining Liverpool, is there any chance Chelsea sign Pepe Reina? And should they also be looking at Lazio Strakosha instead?
So this is a very interesting one. So Pepe Reina signed with Milan on a free transfer last March. It wasn't announced till later on. I think the assumption when, and this was a move made by their former sporting director, Mirabelli. I think the assumption was when that signing was done that Donnarumma would be sold for a big fee and they'd have a replacement on a free on a Bosman signing. When that didn't happen, and I think a big factor in this is Donnarumma's wages are enormous. So if you're a club acquiring, you're not only going to have to pay a big transfer fee to Milan, you're looking at a big annual cost. Maybe there isn't the market that Milan expected for him, but it would be within the rules for Milan to sell Pepe Reina this summer, although they just signed him. I forget the name, but there was a defender on Manchester City where the same thing happened a few years ago. So definitely it's within the rules. It could happen. We know that Sarri loves Pepe Reina. You know, we've talked about how Donnarumma would hypothetically fit at Chelsea. And look, Donnarumma, as far as shot stopper, you know, just the goalie of avoiding goals, is much better than Pepe Reina. But with his feet, he's not even remotely as good as Pepe Reina. And that's something that Sarri values a lot, probably too much. So I wouldn't exclude this altogether. I could see Milan trying to get a quick profit on a Pepe Reina, Sarri getting a keeper that he's comfortable with. Now, the other, and this is just a name that was thrown at me. There's no reports on this. Would Lazio Strakosha do well at Chelsea? And I think he'd be a very good backup option. And we've talked about him in the past when it didn't look like Liverpool would sign Alisson, and we talked about him potentially being someone that Liverpool should look at. So that's definitely a keeper that I think Chelsea should look at. Let's see if more reports emerge on this. Alex, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned would you be if Pepe Reina went to Chelsea, though?
Six, because I would assume it's only for 1 year. And he does fit Sarri's style. And as you said, maybe to a fault, maybe that matters too much to Sarri. But if I am going to assume, and I'm not saying he's out the door, but if I am going to assume Courtois is leaving, well, honestly, I'm willing to give Sarri the security blanket he may want in Pepe Reina while Chelsea take another season to maybe look at a better long-term option. Because honestly, I don't have a lot of keepers out there in the world that I really want on Chelsea at the current moment, considering the style Sarri likes to play. But still, Pepe Reina is just, it's kind of almost, it's even worse than the equivalent of signing Higuain on Chelsea. Sure, he's comfortable with Higuain and Pepe Reina and him being Sarri, but it's really not a sexy signing, but it wouldn't be the worst thing. But David, moving on, and this really excites me, so I'm going to change my tune. With all that happened at Milan, the Benzema story feels like old news. What did you make of it?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I actually thought we were going to lead off with this, but so much happened since. So for those of you not 100% familiar with what happened, there was a report on Di Marzio site, and not just on Di Marzio site, on a lot of places. This was the lead story on Gazzetta dello Sport. It was reported in a lot of places that there was a meeting between Benzema's agent, an intermediary in the deal at Milanello, where Milan practices with Gattuso, where basically Benzema entourage left the door open to telling Milan, look, if you're willing to give him a 4-year contract, so 1 year more than he has with Real Madrid now for the same money, we're open to coming here. So Di Marzio ran with that report. Benzema seemed very upset. First, his agent mocked it on Twitter. Benzema called Di Marzio a liar on Instagram. So what can you say? You know, I'm not here to defend Di Marzio. He's a big boy. He certainly doesn't need my help with that. It was very interesting that once that happened on Di Marzio's side, there was an interview with the intermediary in the deal, not Benzema's agent, but the other person that was there. And he confirmed it. That was put out there. So for that, you know, you can take that for what it's worth. But what I will say is, like, you know, when you're a top player and you make huge money, part of the job is having your name in transfer rumors. And look, a lot of the times, you know, I'm not here to pass judgment on the work of others. You know, sometimes some transfer rumors are more reliable than others. I think maybe it hit a little bit home because it came from such a reliable place. But that's part of being a professional athlete, especially at that level that you have to deal with your name being in transfer rumors. So it is what it is. It was definitely an interesting situation. At this point, though, I think it'd be rather odd if Benzema went to Milan after all this. But that certainly doesn't mean that this isn't a true report. I can tell you our friend Janie Lizarraza, who covers Real Madrid and really knows a lot about the club, like, you know, she texted me and told me, look, you know, I've heard exactly the same thing on Benzema and Milan. So, Alex, I know you're a big fan of Benzema. I haven't followed him as much. Do you think he's washed up? Do you think he has something left? What do you think he should do?
Oh, I am such a Benzema defender and apologist. It's ridiculous. Mainly because I always hated the narrative that, oh, well, he's playing next to Cristiano Ronaldo. Of course he's going to score goals. Ah, come on, stop it. He did throw at one point Higuain off the starting striker job, Alvaro Morata off the starting striker job. He is a damn good striker and a Real Madrid legend, a legend. He has won a lot. He is one of the best all-time Champions League goal scorers. I mean, this guy's got a resume. Sure, Ronaldo has helped, but no, Benzema's a damn good player in and of himself. Now, is he maybe on the back nine? Yes, he probably is, but I still think he definitely has something to offer, something to prove. I wouldn't, as a Milan fan, say, oh my God, we're getting a top striker in the world. No, but you should be getting a striker if it were to happen that is hungry to kind of prove something. And I really do think Benzema is still a very, very good striker who just wants to score goals. But he's actually very unselfish for a striker as well. So you're not bringing in someone that necessarily would ruin the chemistry on the pitch. And by the way, I also did say on Twitter, I'm still kind of searching for that Serie A team I can fully give my allegiances to. I said if Hakim Ziyech from Ajax went to Roma, I'd be a Roma fan. I've kind of been in the Napoli corner because I love Lorenzo Insigne. But I am on record saying if Karim Benzema goes to Milan, I am a full Milan fan within Serie A. I'm getting the kit, all of it. I'm watching all the games. You got it. I'm in the ring for you, Milan, if Karim Benzema goes to your club. So, wow. All right, let's move on. This is an interesting one, David. Does Inter have a realistic shot at signing Arturo Vidal?
So this is interesting because it sounds like Vidal has a pretty good chance he's going to leave Bayern Munich. I think he has 2 years left on his deal. It sounds like the new coach kind of wants to start with a clean slate. And despite being, you know, a very popular player with Juve, it's funny how, you know, now all this news on Bonucci potentially returning, I'm seeing a lot of Juve fans saying, can we just bring Vidal back instead? And maybe when you look at Juve's team, maybe he makes even more sense than Bonucci, but I digress. Despite all that, Vidal in the past has been open to joining Inter. He had agreed to terms with them last year. Inter wasn't able to close the deal with Bayern. The problem is right now, Inter, unless they make a big sale, which I don't expect that they will, they can only add a player on loan with an option to buy. They can't even do a forced option to buy because that would count on their books this season. So they've been trying, even with Versalco, like whatever targets they have left, to offer a loan where they pay some money up front with then an option to buy so they can stay within FFP parameters. But I have a hard time believing Bayern would accept that deal because Vidal's an older player and then he'd have just 1 year left on his contract. I don't think Bayern would want to take the chance of bringing him back there. There's probably some clubs out there who would like to have Vidal and would be willing to just pay the fee. So let's look at this. At this point, I think it's unlikely he goes to Inter, and let's see how the market develops for Vidal.
It would be ridiculous to see Arturo Vidal and Nainggolan run around that pitch. I would run off the pitch if I was their opponent. So, David, next one. Oh, we haven't talked about this guy in a while. Any recent news on Milinkovic-Savic and any chance he stays at Lazio?
It's an interesting question. Look, the last report, I think, was from about a week ago, maybe 10 days ago. There's been so much news that things like that feel like almost a year ago. The last report was on basically Jorge Mendes, although he's not Milinkovic-Savic's agent, acting as an intermediary for Lazio to try to get a big offer, with Real Madrid being the likeliest. That was the last report. I could still see that happening. I've always said PSG could be in the mix. Maybe if Manchester City doesn't get Pjanic, they go back for Milinkovic-Savic. Granted, different type of player, but we know that Guardiola likes to get creative. So I still think there's a better chance than not Milinkovic-Savic will be sold. On the other hand, Lazio, they did very well with the Felipe Anderson deal with West Ham. So in theory, they're not forced to sell. They brought in some players, didn't spend too much. But my guess is still there's going to be a late market for Milinkovic-Savic, and I still think there's a good chance he'll be sold. But hey, if he stays in Serie A, I'd be only happy about that.
All right, David, let's move away from football. Here's a good one. What are some of your favorite horror movies, and you're not allowed to say Chelsea season last year?
Good one. So I got to be honest, it's not my favorite genre. I mean, I've watched a lot growing up, The Shining, stuff like that, a lot of the Stephen King adaptations. But I have to say it's a genre that's gotten a lot better in recent years. Like, I don't know if we can consider Get Out a horror movie. It definitely has some elements of that. I thought that's definitely my favorite of the recent ones, but I'm not sure, again, if it's a pure horror movie. I went to see A Quiet Place, which I thought was quite good. And then the last one that I saw was Hereditary. I was expecting better based on the reviews, but it was certainly pretty scary. Now, I will say my favorite one, for without a doubt, though, is Scream. The original one, the reason I like it so much is that it's so self-aware, self-referential. I think the script is absolutely brilliant. I think it really does the horror genre really well. It's very witty, very funny, but it does have some really gory scenes. So that's one movie that I enjoy rewatching. So those are mine. Any that you like, Alex? I don't know if that's even a genre that you really like.
Oh, man, I get scared enough just doing daily things, but I will say it took me a while to see Get Out. I finally watched it with my girlfriend, and we absolutely loved it. It was a really damn good movie, and I think the number one thing you've said about Get Out that I totally agree with is no matter what movies came out in the last 12 months, that's a movie I will remember 10 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, because it was just so different. It was gripping, absolutely gripping. So horror movies specifically, I can't think of any. But while you said Get Out, I needed to say I finally saw it and I absolutely loved it.
So, and it's so much better when you rewatch it, because then when you know the twist, like, everything just holds up so well. It's really a brilliant film. It's so well done. So anyone who hasn't watched it, listening, definitely check that out right after this podcast.
And I still do need to rewatch it, so I absolutely will. Thank you for saying that. David, last Twitter question. What was it like to see the Foo Fighters at Fenway Park?
So I went Saturday. They played two shows. I think I was very lucky to go Saturday because Sunday it rained a lot. It wasn't a great atmosphere, but it was really a great show. And I have to be honest, they're not one of my favorite bands. I certainly like them a lot. Their first album I love. I still remember, I'm old, the summer when their first album came out, and I was like, oh, Nirvana drummer, new album. Oh, this sounds good, much better than I thought. Never in a million years would I thought that the Foo Fighters would be such a huge band 20 years later. I was trying to think, is there any more recent rock band that could headline a show at Fenway Park, like in a big stadium? Probably not. You could almost argue that Dave Grohl's the last really great big rock star left. So I really enjoyed the show, despite the fact that they aren't at the top of my favorite bands. It's kind of a little bit like Pearl Jam. Like, I like Pearl Jam's albums better than Foo Fighters, but watching them live, you're like, okay, this is really one of the best live bands on the planet. It was a little bit goofy. They don't take themselves too seriously, which I think is very cool. Dave Grohl is just an amazing front man. It was a big stadium. I would imagine there were about 40,000 people there. You really felt like it was his goal to make sure that every single person at the show would have a blast. I really enjoyed it. I'm really into drummers, although I don't play. And I have to say, the drummer in Foo Fighters, Taylor Hawkins, is amazing. He's a really skinny guy, like almost a three-hour set, was absolutely amazing. I personally think he's a better drummer than Dave Grohl. I know a lot of people get upset with that. The only drummers that I enjoy more are the one in Tool, who's definitely Danny Carey, who's the best drummer alive, the guy in The Police, Stuart Copeland, although he's not a metal drummer, is amazing. And my favorite musician is Dave Lombardo of Slayer. But I got to say, Taylor Hawkins after the show really went up my ranking. So I got to hand it to the Foo Fighters, absolutely one of the best live bands I've ever seen. If they ever come to your city, I definitely recommend it. So that's our show for the week, for today. We're going to have some more later in the week. I'm going to try to bring in a guest to get more to the bottom of the whole Malcolm situation. As always, send us in questions for future episodes with the CalcioLand hashtag. I want to take a moment to thank all our listeners that support our work by subscribing to the podcast, tweeting about us, letting your followers know that you enjoy our podcast. It's really helpful. You guys are our marketing department. We love the reviews. Thank you so much for the 5 stars on iTunes. You're listening to us on your iPhone. It takes 2 seconds to do that. And if you leave us a comment, you know, we appreciate it and we read them all. So I hope everyone has a great next few days. We'll chat with you to talk more about the transfer window coming up.